Hello and welcome to another episode of the NBCSports.com College Basketball Talk Podcast. It is Wednesday, February 13th. My name is Rob Dosser. I have a good show on the way for you today. It is the Why Your Team Sucks Podcast. I have Brian Snow from 24/7 Sports back on for the first time this year to help me walk through every single one of the elite teams in college basketball. And we are going to tell you why each one of those teams suck. It's fun, it's enlightening, it's entertaining. Before I get into that, two things. One, I got to make the usual ask. Please rate, please review, please subscribe to this podcast in any app that you listen to podcasts in. When you interact with this episode, whether it's downloading or subscribing or rating or reviewing or whatever it is, it really does help us. It helps us in the rankings. It helps us in the metrics. It makes my bosses happy. When my bosses are happy, I'm happy. And when I'm happy, you are getting a better show. So 5 stars, saying nice things about me, all of that, it really does help. It's going to make your day better. The second thing, I want to talk about this EJ Montgomery goaltending thing really quick. For those that missed it, at the end of the Kentucky LSU game, there was a very controversial play where Skylar Mays drove, threw a floater up at the rim. EJ Montgomery put his hand through the rim trying to block the shot. The shot hits the backboard, bounces off the front of the rim, is still in the cylinder, gets tipped in by Cavell, Bigby, Williams. The referees count the shot. They go back and they look at it to review it on the monitor, and they're watching it, and they can see that it is very clearly offensive basket interference. The basket should not have counted, but they cannot review that since all they can do is go back to review to see if the tip was made in time. It was, so the basket counted, and Kentucky fans lost their mind online, justifiably so. What I said was that it should have counted anyway, because when EJ Montgomery went up to block the shot, he put his hand in the rim, got it stuck in the net, grabbed the rim, hit the rim hard enough that the angle from the top of the, from the camera on top of the basket, you can see it start to shake when he hits the rim. Now, technically, by the letter of the law, since the ball was not on the rim at the time that he hit it, it is not technically basket interference or goaltending or whatever it is, which is just an unbelievable rule. Let me phrase it like this. EJ Montgomery went up to try to block a shot. In the process of trying to block that shot, while the ball is in the air and right before it goes and bounces off the backboard, he puts his hand through the rim, hits the rim, grabs the rim, hits it hard enough that it shakes the backboard. You can tell from the camera on top of the basket. He pulls on the net as he is going by and as he is going down. All of this happens within a tenth of a second of the time that the ball actually hits the backboard. In any level, that is basket interference, that's goaltending, that's whatever it is. But according to the letter of the law, I guess that is not something that technically can be called basket interference, which to me is exactly the same as all of those situations in the NFL where it's very clear that Dez Bryant or Calvin Johnson or whoever it was caught a pass and caught a touchdown, and it was ruled incomplete because of some technicality in the rule book that we see when we look at it in super slow motion. Just look at this objectively. He puts his hand through the rim. He hits the rim. He grabs the net hard enough that you could see the basket shake from the camera angle above the basket, all while a shot is in the air as he's attempting to block shot right before it hits the backboard. If that's not goaltending, basketball as a sport is officially dead. Now let's dive into the Why Your Team Sucks podcast. And now I am thrilled to welcome back to the podcast for the first time in the 2018-19 season. We no longer have producer Tess with us, RIP. So Brian Snow from 24/7 Sports can come on this podcast as much as he likes. I've been begging him, I've been pleading with him, and he finally decided that today was the day for the Why Your Team Sucks podcast. So Snowman, I appreciate you coming on, man. Thanks.
You know, it's good to be here. It's tough for me to find time for a small person like you, Rob, but I figured today would be the day I can do that.
Well, I do appreciate that. And it's actually perfect timing because you were in the building last night for one of the more epic collapses that I think that we've ever seen. So can you just kind of take me through what it was like in there while Louisville was deciding to, I don't think that they realized that they were actually wearing the black jerseys last night. I think that they thought they had their home whites on because for the last 9 minutes, all they did was just give the ball to Duke. Do you think they realized that they were actually wearing their dark jerseys, their dark uniforms? I don't know what happened there.
That was wild. I literally, at the under eight, I turned to the person I was with and I said, you know, if I'm Coach K, I almost just pull the parachute here. I'm down 20, just rest my guys, take my L, and go on. You know, I was like, ah, maybe give it another minute or two, and then if you need to limit Zion's minutes, just do it. And then all hell broke loose. I don't know how else to say it. And they just put a press on, and Louisville's guards did not handle it well at all.
It was very clear that nobody on that team actually wanted the ball in their hands. Because it wasn't just like they were giving the ball away. It was they would have a dude trapped at half court right at the corner, and everybody else on the team would just be kind of standing where they were. No one came to the ball to help. No one was able to like drive against that zone. It wasn't like they were playing great defense. They just jumped all over him and took the ball right away from him.
And here's one thing I'll say. What changed the game is Duke went zone and pressed for the first time right around that 7-minute mark or 8-minute mark, whenever that debacle started. And what they did is they put Zion Williamson at the top of the charge circle, and Louisville's guards and wings were scared to death to shoot inside the 3-point line because they thought it was going to be volleyball spiked back into their nose. Which makes me wonder, is that how Duke needs to play in the future with Zion at the five and just telling Marquise Bolden, like, it's been a good run? You know, I don't know. But putting that intimidating monster of a human at the front of the charge circle as the five on defense totally changed everything about what Louisville was able to do.
On the one hand, I do think that they should play more lineups with Zion at the five because he is – like he's everything you want out of that small ball five, right? One, no center is going to be able to stay with him on the offensive end of the floor. And two, he's a rim protector and he's a terrific rebounder. And he has – there is a presence, like you said, where he intimidates people. That said – going to that zone and playing the way that they did is not going to work against teams that don't shit their pants as soon as they see a little bit of zone and as soon as they realize, like, oh, wow, we might end up blowing this game. Maybe it'll work against, like, against Virginia if they just wear UMBC on their jersey or something like that.
Ooh, that's a shot.
That is a shot. But for the most part, I don't look, you got to give Duke credit for making the plays, right? They got those steals. Cam Reddish made a bunch of big shots. So they made the plays down the stretch to get that win, but that was, I would say that was like 80% Louisville choking that game away. And just, I don't think that for the most part, like that's not the way that it's going to happen against most teams and most good teams. It's just, it's shocking to me. Like Louisville has veteran guards that have played really well this season that just completely shit all over themselves. Like that was the most lemon booty I've ever seen in my life in a basketball game.
It's fair to say Kristen Cunningham got shook.
Yes, he did.
He was shook. And, like, I don't know if you're Chris Mack what else you can do. He called three timeouts. But when the guy guarding your point guard simply takes his ball, as a coach, I don't know what other answer you have.
There's nothing. There's nothing you can do. Like, I don't know how – you can't go out there and play for your players. At some point, they have to execute. And, like, I don't want to completely throw them under the bus. And I'm sure as hell that Chris Mack is not going to come out and say this publicly at all. But I mean, that's on them. They have to be. Yeah, I mean, like, that. There's no excuse for what they did.
Like Duke really didn't trap too much out of it. I mean, sure they did a little bit, especially around half court. But there were like four or five times like they simply took the Louisville ball handler's ball from him. The guy guarding him just took his ball.
And the craziest part about it,
to a major Division I guard, can't happen.
You're right. It can't. And the craziest part about it is like as soon as they got the ball every single time, right, they just took it and they just punted it into the crowd with 28 seconds left on the shot clock. As soon as Trey Jones got near him, just turn around and punt it into row Z as high as you can into the Yum Center. That would have been 100 times better than just giving them layups over and over again because Duke would still have to score. And even during that comeback, it wasn't like Duke was playing great against their half-court defense. I mean, we saw that charge at the end. They played well defensively, but all that happened was they just gave the ball to Duke and said, here, you know what? I don't want this. You go take the 2 points. I don't want it. We don't want to beat you by 23. I feel kind of bad. Here, take the 2 points.
I looked at it last night. Louisville's last 18 possessions, they turned it over 9 times. They only had 7 shots to the rim, and then they had 2 trips where they got fouled, but they got fouled in situations where they weren't even in a position to score. They just got fouled. and they made free throws. But of those seven shots, two of them were made threes, three of them were missed threes, and then one of them was Ryan McMahon trying a reverse layup over Zion Williamson.
I think that that is actually like, that's what you want normally, right? Like Ryan McMahon driving to the lane, reverse layups, acrobatics against Zion Williamson.
And then the other missed shot was the final play of the game.
Yeah, it wasn't good for him. It was not a good look. Ooh. Which is, and you know, this is actually a good segue to dive into Duke, because I think that Louisville, for the first 30 minutes and 45 seconds of that game, really showcased the reasons why. I don't want to say why Duke sucks, because I think they're unbelievable, but they showcased why Duke sucks. So talk to me about how Duke can be beaten and how you neutralize Zion and RJ and Cam Reddish and all of these future NBA superstars.
First of all, I don't think all of them are future NBA superstars, so that'd be the first thing. But the reality is Duke doesn't make threes. And in this day and age of college basketball, can you win six games, five of which are theoretically going to be against good teams on a neutral court, without making threes? That's a tough ask. And not only do they not make threes, they'll take them, but they don't take them confidently. Like Trey Jones, he was scared to death to shoot a three last night.
Mm-hmm.
Now Zion, you know, he last resort takes them. RJ Barrett, I know he went superhuman at Virginia, but he doesn't want to. Then Cam Reddish will take him, but he's streaky as heck. So you're looking at it like, can you beat good teams consistently away from home without making threes? I don't know if you can.
I think that if any team can do it, it is the team that has the two guys that are probably as unstoppable getting to the rim as anybody, with RJ and Zion. The win that they got against Virginia at home, Virginia plays the pack line. That's exactly the kind of defense you want to play against Duke. And RJ and Zion, the first time they played, got to the rim every single time that they wanted to get to the rim. So I think that helps them. But the thing about Duke that really, I'm not sure people quite realize, is they are very much like, they're a confidence team. They go through these long stretches where they could just look absolutely awful. And it wasn't just against Louisville that they've done this. In the first 24 minutes against Georgia Tech at home, they scored 27 points. Georgia Tech played that zone. They just kind of packed it in. They dared Duke to shoot over the top. They didn't let anybody get any penetration. They put two people around Zion every single time that he was like trying to get one of those little duck-ins. And Duke had no idea what to do. And they were completely out of sorts. And when they're not making their shots, it's just, you know, it's natural for anybody when you're not making shots to kind of not play as hard defensively. It's just like human nature and what happens to basketball teams. But it happens even more with this group. And I think part of it is just because you have your four best players are freshmen. And you know, freshmen are going to do freshman things. And that's a freshman thing. But they go through these long stretches. They did it against Boston College, too. They were losing at home by four to Boston College. I don't think they played that well in the first half against St. John's. So they go through these stretches where they just like, it looks like they're not even playing hard. And I think that they are playing hard, but there's just like, they don't have that energy level that takes them to the point where it's like, oh my God, this is unbelievable. I can't believe what we're watching. And then when they do turn it on, you know, you're dead. There's nothing you can do. And I think that we see that once they get to that point, you know, maybe it's because Zion gets a, you know, jumps a Pascaling and throws down some 360 dunk, or maybe it's because Cam Reddish makes a couple threes in a row, or maybe it's because Jordan Goldwire comes in and gives them a little spark of energy and creates three turnovers that they get layups out of. Whatever turns them into that team where they're finally playing with energy, there's nothing you can do. But if they don't have that spark, you see things like what happened against Louisville.
Yeah, I mean, they're an interesting team. They don't make a lot of threes. Like, they have some good defensive pieces, but they have some incredible defensive breakdowns as well. And then they're a sprained ankle, a jammed finger, or whatever you want to say, away from really being in trouble. There's a lot of reason to believe they're not going to win the national title. Now, there's a lot of reason to believe they will, but there's a lot to believe that they won't.
Yeah, I think the way that I would phrase it is that when they are their best, no one can beat them, right? When they really get it going, nobody is going to be able to beat them. But the margins between Duke really getting it going and Duke being a team that can be down 23 points on the road to a Louisville team that might not have an NBA player on the roster, that it's razor thin. Like, they're on the edge at all times. And, you know, maybe it's like four fouls, like what Zion had really quickly in the second half. Or maybe it is RJ Barrett rolling an ankle or whatever. Or, you know, against Syracuse when Trey Jones had his shoulder thing and Cam Reddish had the virus. It takes one game like that in the tournament, and all of a sudden they are a different basketball team. You agree?
I do agree.
Should we move on?
Next team.
Let's talk about, you know what, I want to talk about Virginia next, because I think that there's an argument to be made that I don't think they have the highest ceiling in the country. Duke does, but I think that they might be the best and most consistent team in the country in Virginia. So tell me why Virginia sucks, Snow.
Have you watched Virginia the last like 8 marches in a row?
Yes, like, I have. Believe it or not, I have.
You're just going to have to prove it to me that style can win in March.
This is your favorite thing to say. I can't wait.
Than they need to be.
I can't wait for this argument. This is your favorite thing to say. So let me hear it. Give it to me.
They actively try to make games closer than they need to be. You have better players than everybody else for the most part. Why don't you let your better players play more possessions and prove they're better players? I know Kihei Clark gets all the love in the world from people like yourself. When he's on the floor, they're playing 4-on-5 on offense.
Yes. No, I'm with you. I'm on the I don't want to say the anti-Kihei Clark bandwagon, but I think that his minutes need to be limited. He needs to be the guy that is on the floor because Ty Jerome or Kyle Guy needs a breather, not the guy that's getting 30 minutes a game.
Yeah. They got no one they can really throw it to on the block and get a bucket. Like, Jack Salt's more of a screener, offensive rebounder. You know, Jay Huff isn't that. But again, it just comes down to, can you play that slow and win a national title? History tells us the answer is no. And obviously the UMBC thing was a freak show. It won't happen again. They're not losing to a 16. But, like, they don't drive you real well. They don't post you real well. If they have a game where they're just an average shooting team from Guy and Jerome, which is – it's very, very possible. Are they going to beat a good team in March on a neutral court? History tells us the answer is no, and nothing has changed.
I do agree with that. If there are a lot of times where it feels like their offense creates tough shots, and they have dudes that can make tough shots. Like, I think DeAndre Hunter is going to be a top 5 player in this draft class. That's how high I am on him. I think that he is. The more that you could give him the ball in isolation against bigger defenders, the better Virginia is going to be. I think Ty Jerome might be the toughest point guard in college basketball. He doesn't look it. He looks like some rich kid from New York that you can push around. But that kid's got stones. That kid makes big shots. He's got a little bit of a dog in him. He's definitely a motherfucker. So I can see him being a guy like we saw against Duke. He can make big shots and tough shots. Kyle Guy, when he gets in a rhythm, is one of the best shooters in the country. But the problem is, if you are relying on Kyle Guy to make like those kind of catch and shoot with a hand in his face, coming off of a curl jumpers, and you're relying on Ty Jerome, who doesn't have any kind of like physical, natural, explosive ability, and you're relying on DeAndre Hunter to kind of like kill you in the mid-range, that is not necessarily the most efficient way to win a basketball game. You can win games like that, but 6 in a row, against what would presumably be at least 3 of them against top 10 teams, that's a big ask out of a program like that.
Yeah, and history tells us they just don't do it. That doesn't mean they can't do it, but until it's to the point, the way the bracket came out last year, I was really mad at myself because I put Virginia in the final game, even though I didn't believe in them even a little bit. Now, I knew no one would beat Villanova, but I was like, you know, and this year, I'm saying, until they get there, I just can't buy into it. I just can't.
I think, you know,
this is eventually going to happen, but I can't do it now.
This is kind of very narrative driven, but I wonder how much of it is going to be a mental block once they get to the tournament, because that's the kind of thing, you know, a lot of these guys that they are playing this year were on that team that totally embarrassed themselves last season. And yes, it's going to be different with DeAndre Hunter. And yes, Braxton Key has been really, really good, especially defensively of late. And he lets them play four out on the perimeter. And they've been doing a lot more of this ball screen continuity offense instead of just like the blocker mover with two bigs that are complete non-factors on the offensive end of the floor. So I think that they are better on that end. It's easier for them to match up with people, whatever. But you still got to get over the mental hurdle of, okay, if they are down, you know, let's say it's a tie game and the other team goes on a quick little 6-0 spurt with 5 minutes left in the game, right? That's probably going to happen at some point in the tournament. What happens to them when they have to deal with that? That is the big question I have. And I mean, it's the kind of thing, like you said, I need to see them prove it. You
next
agree?
Squad.
Next one. Tell me why Kentucky sucks. No.
One, they're losing at home to LSU. Not that LSU is a bad team by any stretch, but that's a game, if you're a national title team, you think you're going to win. But, you know, PJ Washington has kind of turned into a superhuman. Is he going to be that for 2 months in a row? Ugh, not sure. Then Ashton Hagen's great player at point guard. Can't shoot. You got a point guard who can't shoot. Can UK make enough threes? And then Reed Travis kind of is what he is at this point. A solid big who exposed the soft front lines in the Pac-12, but not a dude. They're talented. They're playing better. I don't know if they're good enough. And, like, you look at Tyler Hero. He has his moments. I'm not relying on Tyler Hero in March. I just don't think they have quite enough perimeter firepower from the outside to win. And that, I think that's their Achilles heel, along with Reed Travis just not being quite what we thought Reed Travis was.
I agree with all of that. I think that the Ashton Hagen's not being enough of a threat offensively is a major issue that has kind of gone under-discussed when talking about this team. I think he's a little bit more advanced than maybe people give him credit for, but he's still a long, long way from, you know, you look at the title teams over the years and everybody always has a great point guard, right? It's hard to win in March without a great point guard. And as good as Hagen's is defensively, he's not there on the offensive end. Like, the thing with Travis that gets me is he's not a floor spacer, right? Like, he's not a guy you want shooting. I know he hit one last night, but he's not a guy you want shooting threes. But he's also not a vertical spacer. He's not somebody where, you know, Kentucky loved when they can get their guards into the lane and then throw it up at the rim because it keeps the big man honest. And you have to make a decision. Are you going to go help or are you going to stay there to protect against the lob? And you don't have that vertical spacer. You know, Nick Richards, I think what they've needed is for Nick Richards to beat out Reed Travis for that starting five spot. And he has not been good enough to do that. No. I think, you know, I'm a little less concerned about Tyler Hero than I think you are. But that's because in my mind, I see Tyler Hero being like the third option. In an ideal world, you want PJ and Keldon Johnson to be like the one and two options. But I don't know what's going on with Keldon. Man, I thought he had more game than he does.
Yeah, I think people got a little fired up on Keldon. Even early in the season when he was putting up numbers, I was kind of like, you know, he doesn't shoot it great. He's a tough kid, but he's not like a beast getting to the rim. He's good, but I don't think he's a dude.
Yeah, I think I bought into the hype a little bit too much early in the year. That's probably what happened. I do think that this is going to last with PJ Washington, though. I'm on the PJ Washington bandwagon. I've kind of changed my tune on that. I think that he's been, if we're just going off of the last 3 weeks, he's been an All-American.
No question.
But he definitely needs more help, and I'm not sure where it's coming from on the perimeter. I didn't realize that Tyler Hero is only shooting like 35% from three on the season. I thought that it was definitely higher than that.
We started off horribly.
Yep.
So that plays a part. But yeah, and he's always been a little bit more streaky. Like, due to his complexion, people assumed he was like a 40% three-point shooter. He's never really been that. He's a good shooter, maybe even a very good shooter. He's never really been a great shooter.
Are you saying that scouts and media members like to stereotype white people as shooters? Is that what you're saying, Snow?
Yeah, it happens occasionally. Shocking, I know.
Every once in a while, right?
Yeah.
Is there something they can do to fix this, or is this just the situation where, you know, you got to hope that you get Tyler Hero going all like what Malik Numa did in the tournament last year? You need something like that out of Tyler Hero and Keldon Johnson.
I think that's what has to happen, is he kind of has to really catch fire, and then you got to dominate on the glass and see if that can happen.
Yeah. I'm with you. I'm with you. I think they're good, and I think they're definitely good enough to win it. I just don't – I don't think I would put them in the top four, if that makes sense, even though we've just kind of talked about them as the third best team here. So let's move on. Let's talk about the rest of that, who I think is going to be in the top four and who I think is probably the best team in the SEC in Tennessee. Snow, tell me why Tennessee sucks.
This is the hardest one for me because I do like how tough they are and, you know, just how they play and how they never seem to beat themselves and how veteran they are. They kind of fit the mold of the team that's won the national title more often than not here recently. And they have just a monster of a human in Grant Williams. But I would say, like, are their guards – do we trust their guards in March to make big plays in one-on-one situations when it's needed? Like, is Lamonte Turner going to be that guy? You know, Jordan Bone, Jordan Bowden. Can we count on them, and do we feel comfortable with those guys when it gets late clock in a close game being the man? That's a little bit of a tough sell. But again, this is the team I personally have the most confidence in right now.
Even more than Duke?
Yeah, because Duke doesn't make threes.
Fair enough. I think that this is probably along the same lines as your concern, but I just wonder who takes over a game for Tennessee. Mm-hmm. And I know that Grant Williams did it against Vanderbilt, but that's also Vanderbilt. I want to know what happens when he's being guarded by a DeAndre Hunter, or he's being guarded by Zion Williamson, or he's being guarded by PJ Washington or Brandon Clark. Is he going to be able to take over games the way that he has against some of the teams in the SEC? And look, I know that they've won all these games in a row, and what is it now? I think it's 18 straight games that they've won, but only one of those games came against the surefire tournament team. The best team that they've beaten in SEC play is what? Florida, Alabama, and Arkansas. Like, am I supposed to be impressed by beating Florida with Jalen Hudson, who has completely disappeared, and Keevon Allen, who is probably the most inconsistent player in the history of the planet? So I want to see them go up against the same kind of elite level competition that we've seen some of these, like Duke and Virginia, go up against before I can really jump on this bandwagon where I say, okay, they have enough elite talent where they're going to have guys that can take over games. And also, like, Admiral Schofield had a month-long stretch where he just kind of disappeared, and we kind of lost what he was and just how good he was. And I want to see him get back to that level.
Yeah, I'm not going to say anything negative about Admiral Schofield. He can kill me with his bare hands.
Yeah, he might be able to find you, too. You're down in the South. You're down in Kentucky. You're not that far away. You got to be careful, man.
For the record, Admiral, that was Rob Doster who was talking crap, not me.
Anything else to add about Tennessee?
No, I think, as I said, they're the team I look at and I say, like, who checks the boxes of what we've seen from a national title team the last 4 years? They're it.
All right, so let's move on. The last member of what I think is the top four and the clear-cut top four seeds would be Gonzaga. Snow, tell me why Gonzaga sucks.
Josh Perkins.
Yes, I'm so glad you said that.
Like, let's call it what it is. Like, I could see Gonzaga winning the national title, and I can see them losing, not getting out of the first weekend. I swear to you. Because if Josh Perkins has a Kristen Cunningham meltdown, which I think is very, very, very possible, what are they? That and Rui Hachimura is really good, but that Killian Tilly, let's be honest, even if he comes back, he's been inactive in essence for so much of this season, he's not going to be an impact guy. And without that big who can really stretch the floor, I think that takes away some of what Gonzaga is able to do. Now, obviously, Brandon Clark's a bad boy. Rui's really good. Zach Norvell can shoot it. So they have their options. But when your point guard is Josh Perkins, that's a hard way to make a living in March.
Well, elaborate on why. Like, what's your issue with Josh? My issue with Josh Perkins is I don't think he's a great decision maker.
And yeah, he turns it over.
Turns it over a lot. And
you can get into him. Like, okay, you can get into Josh Perkins, and they, you know, I think they were hoping Geno Crandall could help with that, but they certainly don't have a lot of confidence in Geno to be that. And you can just take Gonzaga out of what they want to do if Josh Perkins is uncomfortable, And I think a good team can make Josh Perkins uncomfortable.
And here's the other part about that. So you look at some of these other great teams in college basketball, right? Whether it's Michigan with Xavier Simpson or Kentucky with Ashton Hagans or Duke with Trey Jones or, you know, whoever. There are a lot of very, very, very good on-ball defenders that play the point guard spot. And those are exactly the kind of guys that can give Josh Perkins fits. And so much of what Gonzaga has done, like so much of what their offense is, runs through the fact that, like, so while we're knocking him, we might as well say, like, call it like it is. Like, when he's playing well, he's really, really good in ball screens. And when you have the shooters that Gonzaga has and Norvell and Kispert and, you know, to a point, Rui and some of the athletes that they have, he can be really effective in ball screens and running those ball screens. And he's a good passer and he's slick and he can really see the floor. So when he's going right, he can be a really good point guard. The problem is, like you said, if you take him out of what he wants to do and don't let him get to the spots that he wants to get to, then all of a sudden he starts losing his mind, throwing the ball all over the place, turnovers. And the other part of it, which I think is almost a bigger concern for me, is I don't know how good they actually are defensively. Now, Brandon Clark can erase a lot of mistakes. I think you can make the argument he might be the single best defender in all of college basketball. Maybe this side of like a Zion Williamson, just because of the threat that Zion Williamson provides.
I'll say that Zion gives up a lot of buckets.
Yes, he does. He's not great once you get one-on-one. I think that's where Brandon Clark has him. That said, I think that Zion is a better I think he's a better shot blocker. I think that he is a better rebounder, and I think that he is more of a presence that deters people from going to, like, I think you have more of Zion in the back of your mind than you do Brandon Clark, but we're kind of like, this is like, what do you like, vanilla or chocolate ice cream more? Both of them are really, really, really damn good. But beyond that, like, Josh Perkins isn't a great defender. Zach Norvell's tough, but I wouldn't call him a great on-ball defender.
He doesn't move great laterally at all.
Yeah. Corey Kispert is a great glue guy. I don't know if I would necessarily call him a great one-on-one defender. I think he's good. He's probably the second best defender they have. And then Rui, you know, he's lost. Yes, he can block some shots, but if you go back and you watch the tape and you see how some teams beat them, part of what they do is just isolate him and get him on the perimeter. Like when Duke made their comeback against Gonzaga, it was because all they did was create those switches until they got RJ Barrett or Zion Williamson being guarded by Rui. And then it was literally straight line drives to the left, get to the bucket, score, sometimes an and one.
And like the thing about like Josh Perkins, and God, I sound like I'm just burying him, and I hate to do that, but when like they played Illinois, and I'm not even talking the January, February version of Illinois, I'm talking the March version of Illinois, or excuse me, the November version of Illinois, who was just a terrible basketball team. The one thing Illinois would do is put pressure on you, and he was shook. And Gonzaga struggled to beat Illinois when Illinois was playing as bad as any Power 5 team in the country.
Yep.
That's worrisome.
Trent Frazier lit. Was that the game where Trent Frazier had like 30?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's not a good sign for old Josh Perkins. So I think we've kind of covered Gonzaga about as much as we can. Now we're going to move into your forte, a couple of Big Ten teams. I want to start with the team that lost last night, the Michigan Wolverines. Did you see John Beilein get run, by the way?
I did not. I mean, I saw kind of like the quick clips of it.
It was pretty great. Xavier Simpson got lit up by a screen. That was probably a moving screen that looked like a terrific form tackle. It might have been called targeting if this was college football instead of college basketball. And Beilein just kind of lost it. And I don't know if he actually curses, but watching him on the sideline, I would not be surprised if he dropped a couple F-bombs, because he was screaming at the ref, and he didn't necessarily do anything that was over the top, unwarranted in terms of like what maybe like a Mick Cronin or a Danny Hurley does, but he kept going and going and going, and it was at halftime too. So all the teams were off the floor. So he went back into the locker room, and I'm sure he went in and said to his team, "Hey guys, I just got thrown out of the game. You're going to have to win this without me." And they were already down by 13 points.
The Big Ten tackle basketball for a reason, because you're allowed to do that in the Big Ten.
I guess so. Tell me why Michigan sucks, Snow.
Again, Xavier Simpson, love him to death as a player. I think he's a winner. Can't shoot. And also, Not only can he not shoot, you can't play him late in games because he can't make free throws. Mm-hmm. That's a big problem when your best defender and the guy who runs your team can't be in the game if it's close.
Mm-hmm. And he's not the only one that can't shoot on that team either. Charles Matthews can't really shoot either. You want him shooting jump shots.
That's what I was about to get to. Last year, John Beilein was able to put Charles Matthews at the four and play him as a straight four man with a center who could pick and pop and stretch. Now, Teske can do that a little bit, but not as much as Mo Wagner. This year with Iggy Brazdeikis out there, who can't guard me and you, Iggy has to play the four. And the worst defender, the worst moving defender stays on Iggy, where it really limits Charles Matthews' effectiveness because he's not a shooter and he's not a great driver. So now you've kind of taken your two best defenders, Matthews and Simpson, who also happen to be your two worst shooters and free throw shooters, and now they have to make it all kind of mismatch together. And these pieces, even though they've been more consistent than the team last year, they don't fit quite as well together.
Yeah, especially on the offensive end of the floor. And there can be stretches where they just are absolutely abysmal to watch. Now, when Charles Matthews gets it going like he did, you know, in the last 10 minutes against Wisconsin on Saturday, he still has the ability to go out and take over a game. And that's why you're looking at Michigan right now as like a top 8, top 10 team. But they're like what Penn State did last night was basically just take him away. And dare Xavier, like they don't even guard Xavier Simpson on the three-point line. Teams just leave him all by himself. And what that does is it just clogs up everything in the lane. And when you clog up everything in the lane, you take away what Iggy Brazdeikis does best and you take away what Charles Matthews does best, and that's driving and slashing.
And that's the other thing with Iggy. I don't know what he's shooting right now from three, but earlier in the year it was, I think, upper 30s. He's never been that. He's never been an upper 30s three-point shooter. He's always been a mid-range guy, a scorer more than a shooter. I'm not sure I buy him as a three-point shooter, especially as his legs are going to get tired later in the season, as the pressure heats up. Now, the kid's a gamer. Don't get me wrong. It's not like he's going to wilt under pressure, but it's natural that the later, the more pressure, the harder shots become. I think that three-point shooting percentage will regress to what his career has shown it is. And now you have one more shooter, one more guy who isn't a huge threat from three.
Yeah, for me, the jump shots that he's making is the biggest reason why Michigan is what they are so far this season. Because I think we all kind of expected them to be about what they are defensively, right? Like, and I guess John Teske improving to the point that he has on the defensive end of the floor. But the fact that Iggy can kind of space the floor and pull people away, it gives you a second shooter. Which is, I mean, they have to have that with the players that they have and the roster that they have and the makeup that they have. And like you said, if he's not making those shots, then all of a sudden that the floor just shrinks and shrinks and shrinks and shrinks and shrinks. So talk to me about the other Michigan team. Why does Michigan State suck, Snow?
They got to get Nick Ward on the reservation consistently. Like, my man went completely AWOL for about 2 weeks there. And Nick, he can be a monster, but him and Izzo, it doesn't take a lot of inside information to figure out those two. They don't always see eye to eye. And I think, you know, he fights Izzo and Izzo fights him. And, you know, when it's harmonious and things are going well for the Spartans. But when it's not, whoo, buddy. Then the other thing is, let's be honest, they're just not that talented. Cassius Winston's a really good player. Is he a pro? I don't know. Nick Ward's a really good player. He's not a pro. Then you got Kenny Goins, former walk-on. Matt McQuaid, good player. You know, he's kind of like a Dakota Mathias type guy from Purdue last year. Like, makes timely shots, good defender, whatever. You know, but is anyone scared of Matt McQuaid?
No.
Then Aaron Henry's a freshman who needs time. You know, without Joshua Langford, I mean, their talent level just is not blowing anybody away. And coaches in the Big Ten think you can wear down Cassius Winston as the game goes on. Now, they say he's better about it this year than he was last year. But they say, you know, you get to the end of the half and the end of the game, because Foster Lawyer really only plays 1 minute a game, you can kind of get to Cassius and he's going to wear down on you.
And it's not just the end of a game either. I think if you look at, you know, the Purdue game that they lost, was it at Purdue when they got run out of the gym early on? That was their, that was Michigan State's third game in the span of 6 days and their fourth road game in the span of 5 games. And you could just tell that they looked tired. I mean, you watch the game and more than anything, it just looked like it took them about 25 minutes to finally wake up and get into the rhythm. And to me, that's a sign of, okay, it's late in January. We just had 4 road games and 5 out of 5 games, and you kind of get tired. And the problem is, if Cassius isn't out there making plays and doing things, like you just kind of, like you said, run into an issue with talent. I think there's also like a very real lack of athleticism on that team. And I wonder what happens when you get up against somebody. Like, I think Illinois kind of exposed it a little bit because they're not a great team, but they definitely have athletes and they definitely get out and pressure you. And all of a sudden it was like, okay, we can't get around people. We can't make our cuts and get open. Cassius Winston started throwing the ball into the ninth row over and over and over again. And they just completely lost their minds once they faced teams that were that was much more athletic than them and really, really, really getting up in them.
Which is interesting because who's probably the team Michigan State wants to see in their region? Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
Because Virginia lets you run your stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And, but, you know, if they get a team like a Duke where Trey Jones is pressuring you, that could be really bad news.
I think Tennessee would not work out for them all that well either.
No, that's a bad matchup.
That would be a very bad matchup. You got anything else to add about Michigan State? You know what? Let me ask you this real quick. Where do you fall on the idea that Josh Langford, that Michigan State might be better without Josh Langford?
It's absolutely asinine. Like, I don't know how anyone can say that.
I thought it for a second. I'll be real. I thought it. And it's not because he wasn't a good scorer. I just thought that the ball moved better without him on the floor. And I thought that Matt McQuaid would be able to do the things that Langford would be able to do. And I thought that having Aaron Henry on the floor gives them more athleticism, gives them a defender. But I just, without him, they're just, all of a sudden it becomes like really, really difficult at times to make shots. If you can take away Cassius and if Nick Ward, like you said, happens to be off the reservation at that moment.
Yeah. Which could happen at any moment in time.
You never know.
Yeah. You need your best players, and Joshua Langford's one of their best players. Aaron Henry, one of my favorite kids I've covered, grew up 20 minutes from where I live, fantastic kid. He's not ready to be a go-to guy or even a top three option or four option on a national title. He's just not ready for that right now.
He's going to be really good, though.
He'll be a good player, but he's 18, 19 years old.
It's going to take him some time. Last thing about the Big Ten, Purdue and Wisconsin, I think, are the only other two teams that I can see making a run to get to the Final Four. Do you think either of them have enough?
No. Of the two, I like Purdue better. But my problem with Purdue is they are so Carson Edwards driven, and they take so many hard shots. And a lot of difficult shots in March, you're going to have a game where they just don't go in. Mm-hmm. And as we saw, I think it was last night, Carson Edwards can throw a 7-for-30 at you. And Ryan Klein, if he's not, you know, he's given you nothing besides three-point shooting. So if he's having a bad three-point shooting game, they become really limited. Now, I think Painter does a great job in terms of putting guys in position to excel, given their skill sets. But they don't have guys who can break you down outside of Carson Edwards. They don't have guys who really scored on the post. Travion Williams can a little bit. Matt Harms can't. They're so reliant on tough threes. We're not talking like Villanova last year who shot a ton of threes. Villanova shot a ton of threes that were great threes because their guards broke you down and kicked it out to great shooters. Purdue shoots tough threes off of pattern movement. And that I just don't think you can win the title that way.
Last night is the perfect example of that. I think Carson Edwards was 7-for-10 in the first half. He had 17 points, and Purdue went into the half at Maryland up 38-30. In the second half, he was 2-for-14. Daryl Morsell just got all up in him, gave him all kinds of problems, and Purdue ended up losing by 14 points. They were outscored by 22 in the second half when Carson Edwards didn't going. And with Wisconsin, I'll answer it for you. My biggest issue is Ethan Happ cannot shoot. It's all in his head at this point. He is horrible from the free throw line. And when your big guy, when your best player is a post player that cannot make free throws, that is very easy to foul and very, very easy to put on the free throw line, you have a very limited ceiling.
On top of that, Ethan Happ misses a lot of shots. Like, if you can stay between him and the rim, he misses a lot of shots.
Yeah, he does. And I think that we saw that very much on display against Michigan State on, was that last night?
They lose. No, last? They played Merrill, or I don't know.
It was last night. Yeah. Tuesday night. Ethan Happ, just Nick Ward did a great job doing exactly what you said, staying between him and the rim. And Ethan Happ missed a lot of easy shots. He's not really going to muscle you. You know, he's one of these guys that's going to try
to footwork you.
Yep.
You got to be disciplined. But if you can be disciplined, he misses a lot of shots.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's move to the Big East. I do want to talk about Marquette and Villanova. You know what? Let's start with Marquette. Why does Marquette suck?
Because they need Marcus Howard to be a superhuman, and they have no one who can score inside of 8 feet. Like, Theo John can block shots. Ed Morrow can block shots and rebound. Those guys cannot score. Matt Helt can't play. Like, and then Marcus Howard is so reliant on making incredibly difficult shots. I think they can win a game. I think they can have the best team Wojo's had. But until they find a way to beat you with drives and beat you on the block, I think it's a lot like Purdue. Now, I think they're a little bit better than Purdue, but I think they have a lot of the same issues that Purdue has in terms of finding a way to beat teams, really good teams away from home.
Yeah, I think the reason why they struggle so much with St. John's is St. John's has length and athleticism all over the floor, especially with Justin Simon. They can really get up into Marcus Howard, and that's what he struggles with, is people that have length and athleticism, because he can only create so much space when you're 5'11", right? And you're only going to be so athletic when you're 5'11" and you can't really jump and being able to get to the rim. So you put length and athleticism on him, he's going to struggle. St. John's has basically like five wings.
Yeah, if you can switch Marquette, like even Xavier, who's not any good, switched Marquette 1-5 for the most part and gave them worlds of problems.
Yeah, because they can't take advantage of it. You know, if you switch, let's say, I don't know, like if you switch Virginia 1-5, right, then you're going to be able to give the ball to DeAndre Hunter. He's going to go in the post and he's going to beat you. If you switch Michigan State 1-5, like Nick Ward, he's going to bury you. He gets you on his back. He's going to score. And Marquette does not have that guy. I also think that they run into a problem because Theo John, like, is he ever not in foul trouble? I swear every Marquette game I watch, he has 2 fouls in the first 5 minutes.
Yeah, well, that's because he goes for every block and goes for every rebound, and he has no regard for human life while doing it.
And I don't think he's... The other part about spreading them out, and this is what they ran into against Villanova, is if you get five perimeter players on the floor, which you can play against them because Theo John's not going to take advantage of you on the inside, he's very susceptible to fouling off the dribble. Now, you kind of have to chalk up to how he plays. Like, this is the way I think about it. You have to assume that he's going to get 2 to 3 fouls a game just from being the size that he is, trying to block shots the way that he does, like the typical kind of battling for rebounds that big man picks up fouls. You got to chalk up like 2.5 fouls to that, right? But he also he's going to pick up a foul here or there because he's got to like chase around the Eric Pascals of the world. And those guys are going to put the ball on the floor and try to get by him. And he's going to foul you at some point, like 1 or 2 times. And all of a sudden you're looking up and he's got 3 fouls and there's 18 minutes left in the second half. And you got to put him on the bench. And like Ed Morrow is a useful player, but he does not provide the same kind of rim protection that Theo John does. And I think that without that anchor, they become a much, much worse defensive team. But that anchor can just stay on the floor. Like he plays like what, like 19 minutes a game because he gets in so much foul trouble.
Yeah.
So that, to me, that's what their biggest issue is. But I just mentioned Villanova. So why don't you tell me why Villanova sucks though?
Let me make it clear. I'm not in the business of betting against Villanova. That said, they're not the same team they were last year. They're not a very good rebounding team, which drives me bonkers. They have, again, no one you can throw it to inside. They're so reliant on Booth kind of taking over games. And then I think you can rattle Colin Gillespie with pressure. I just think there's too many holes. but I don't want to play them.
Mm-hmm. Because when they get hot, boy, do they get hot.
Yeah.
They were, I think the Marquette game is actually a perfect example because they were bad for what, like the first 28 minutes of that game. And all of a sudden they reel off six straight threes and they take the lead. And if Phil Booth doesn't lose his mind on that last possession, then they probably end up winning that game at Marquette. I think my biggest concern with them is I can't remember the last time that Villanova basically played two guys that you didn't have to worry about. Demir Cosby Roundtree, like what's he going to do?
Jermaine Samuels.
Yeah, Jermaine Samuels. Like I want Jermaine Samuels to be so much better than he is. Because in theory, he's exactly what you like would expect a great perimeter option Villanova player to be, right? You know, he's this versatile guy. He can block shots. He can go out and get some rebounds. He's going to be switchable defensively. But, like, it's basically like sticking you out there offensively. You know, Marquette didn't even bother guarding him on the three-point line.
No.
That's a problem.
And it's in his head, too.
Yep.
Like, at the beginning of the year, he would shoot him. And trust me. No, Jay Wright doesn't tell guys not to shoot. I've said this on Twitter a couple times. They take and make shots. They make shots that no other team in the country would even think about taking. Because he gives them the greenest of green lights. And Jermaine Samuels has self-checked. And that's a problem. Like, it's like with Ben Simmons and the Sixers. Like, he has to at least take them if there's no one within 20 feet of him.
Mm-hmm.
You have to take them.
You have to. And eventually they're going to start going in. Like, he's not a horrendous three-point shooter. I think he's up at, like, 30% on the season or something like that. Like, he can make them a little bit. He made two against Marquette, and that's what that's where the comeback came from. Try it. Shoot him up, sleep in the street, Snow.
I mean, we'll go with it.
All right, so let's move on. Nevada. Why does Nevada suck?
How good are they? Like, really, how good are they? Can they rebound? Can they defend? Can they, against teams with quick guards, can they stay in front at all? I think you can expose them in a lot of different ways. I really do. They have versatile pieces, but, like, Jordan Caroline's got his limitations. Which I get my Martins confused. What is Cody can't shoot at all or Caleb can't? I don't freaking remember.
Cody's the one that can't shoot but is like the point guard, and Caleb's the one that turns it over a ton but is the scorer.
Yeah, like, are those guys good enough? Can they put a team on their back? I don't think so. I think they're a good team. They're a nice story. But I just think there's flaws just in terms of all over that roster with how they fit, and I just don't think they're nearly good enough defensively.
So here's my thing about it. They are a team that's built on this idea that, like, you can go out and they're just going to beat you one-on-one. Like, they're going to win at wherever they find a mismatch, whether it's somebody trying to guard Jordan Caroline, somebody trying to guard one of the Martin twins, putting a smaller guy in Trey Porter, whatever it is, they're going to try to find that mismatch, and they're basically going to say, our guys are better than your guys. We're going to go out there and we're going to win these matchups. The problem with that is, like, do they have an NBA player on this team? If the Martin twins were NBA players, they would be in the NBA right now.
NBA player.
Yeah, that's very true. But if they were NBA players, they would be in the NBA right now because they tested the waters and they did not want to come back. But they were told, you are not good enough to be in the NBA right now. That's why they're back. Same thing with Jordan Caroline. If he was an NBA player, he'd be in the NBA right now. So that's my biggest issue with them, is that at some point they are going to run into a team where they're not going to be able to win those matchups. And what happens when that, like, it's Eric Musselman, like, great recruiter. He does have these guys playing well. You got to give him credit for that. But it's not like he's out here reinventing the wheel with what he runs offensively. It's just ISO heavy stuff. He's just saying, okay, our guys are better. We're going to go out and win this matchup. And here's the other thing about it.
It's a lot of the NBA stuff. Get your guy in the position he wants it with space.
Yeah. And here's the other thing about it. They haven't beaten anybody. Am I supposed to be impressed with a win at Loyola, at USC, with a win over Arizona State on a neutral? You know, those are their best wins of the season. Their best win of the season is actually Utah State. And that came at home against a team that's like 35th in the net. They haven't even played a single quadrant one game all season long.
It's actually hard to do.
It's really hard to do. And look, it's not necessarily their fault. Like, I don't think that we should knock them from a seeding perspective because they tried. You look at who they played, they tried, you know. It's not their fault that USC stinks. It's not their fault that Arizona State is about as the most inconsistent team that I think we've ever seen. It's not their fault that Utah's have, like, in the midst of a down year, or that Tulsa isn't really all that good, or UMass isn't really all that good. They tried. You got to give them credit for that, but they haven't beaten anybody. So how are we supposed to trust them?
Not this guy.
All right. So I want to talk about one other team from, I don't want to call it a mid-major because I know there are some guys in the American that listen to this podcast, but another one of the not quite Power Six leagues, Houston. Why does Houston suck, Snow?
Their interior is not good enough. And then Galen Robinson, for everything he does well, he's basically a zero offensively. But, like, Breon Brady, like, I think you can ball screen him as a big guy, and it causes them problems. You know, like, Corey Davis is a good player. Is he a great player? No. And then Deke, DeJon Giroux, he's a good scorer, but he's not a shooter. So it's tough to have him and Galen Robinson on the court at the same time. I think they're a good player. I think Kelvin Sampson's a tremendous coach, and that's going to help in March. But I just don't think they're quite good enough this year to be an elite team and to beat multiple elite teams.
Yeah, I think that they are more towards like the 15 to 20 range. Like, I do think that they're a good team. I think they're good defensively, and they do have pretty good guards. But this is another situation where, like, who on that team scares you, right? Let's say you're game planning against Houston right now and you're a coach. Are you sitting there and looking at anyone and being like, how the hell are we going to stop this dude? How the hell are we going to stop this team? How are we going to stop them from doing this? You know, I think that they're fine. I think that they're well coached. I think that Kelvin Sampson has done a hell of a job getting a team that lost Rob Gray to maybe be better than they were with Rob Gray. But I just don't, like, they don't have that level of talent that I think you need to be able to win four games in March and get to the Final Four. Is that fair?
Yeah, Final Four, it's been proven.
Fair enough, yeah.
You can get there.
They can get there. It's not the kind of team where I can look at them and say, regardless of matchup, they'll be able to find a way to get there. They're going to need some things to break their way.
Definitely.
Yeah. All right, I want to talk about the Big 12 with you before we get out of here. Kansas State, Iowa State. Is there any good teams in that conference? What's your take?
I think there's like six pretty good teams. I don't know that any of them are really very good. Kansas, maybe if whatever's going on with LeGerald Vick magically goes away, and then, you know, you get Marcus Garrett back, maybe they put a little fear in me. But they're not a very good basketball team right now. Then Iowa State, they're too up and down and they're too young. Kansas State, they just don't have the talent level. Like, no one in that league really is going to scare anybody if they draw them in March.
Mm-hmm. If you look at the injuries in that conference too, like, it just seems like everybody has gone down. Whether it's, you know, Texas losing Andrew Jones, or Kansas losing half of their roster, or Iowa State trying to figure out what they're doing with half of Cam Lard and Lindell Wigginton playing however the hell he's playing. It's very much, it seems like a league where all that's left are a bunch of teams that are really, really going to guard you and really going to try to get up in you that just don't have all that much talent offensively. I think Kansas State is probably at this point the favorite to win it, just because there's six games left. They have a 2-game lead, and what, they have three road games, and one of them is at West Virginia.
So who is horrendous.
They are really bad. So I think they're probably going to end up they're probably the favorite. I don't want to say they're going to end up doing anything, because who knows what happens in that conference. But I do think that they're probably the favorite to win it. But in terms of what their long-term ceiling is, Cartier-Jarre going down, I think, is a bigger loss than people realize, because he is a shot maker, and they don't have a lot of shot makers on that team. He's a guy that can create off the bounce. And, you know, at 6'4", with his kind of athleticism, he's one of the reasons that they are as good as they are on the defensive end of the floor. So I think that hurts him a little bit. I do think Iowa State probably has the highest ceiling, and that's just because they have four guys that can make plays on the perimeter. They have a ton of dudes that can shoot, and I think they're probably the most talented team in the
league. But
what's
made you think they're good this year?
Just watching them play. It's not like anything that they've done, because no matter how high I get on them, they can turn around and they can lose at home by 15 to TCU and just get their ass kicked by TCU. So it's not,
then even like Texas, like they keep Texas in the game.
Yeah, I know. You know, like it's, I think that this is like, I can identify, like I know my scouts now. So I know that when I see a team like Ohio State that can play the way that they play and that looks the way that they do when they are doing it, that's the kind of team that I'm going to be like, yeah, they're good. Regardless of what results are. That's the one that I'm, that's the flaw in my game. That's my leak. And I know it. Like I completely understand it. And every time that they win, I'm like, oh, you know what? Maybe I should be back on this Iowa State bed. And we're like, oh, Lindell Wigginton scored 28 points off the bench. Boom. Let's go. Picking them to the Final Four. And then they turn around and they lose by 15 to TCU. Or they completely give away a game at home against Kansas State. It's, I love the idea. Let me put it like this. I love the idea of what Iowa State could be, not so much what they actually are on a night-to-night basis. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I guess you would say, like, the sum of the parts is far greater than the whole.
Yes. Yes. That's a perfect way to say it, actually. They're the most talented team in the conference, right? I'm not losing my mind.
I do think some of their talent's overvalued, but probably with the current state Kansas is in, yes, Iowa State has more talent than Kansas. I mean, Iowa State's not playing Mitch Lightfoot 20 minutes.
Fair enough. So just give me last thing before I let you get out of here.
The Pac-12 is a conference.
Oh, yes. I'm not even going to talk about the Pac-12. I want
it. It's a conference.
It exists. There is something known as the Pac-12 out there. But I do want to, like, just with Kansas, what do you think they need to do to fix it? And is it possible for them to do that? And just give me your take on Texas Tech really quick.
Kansas, LeGerald Vick has to come back, and he has to come back being Steph Curry, like he was the first month of the season. Without that, there's really nothing they can do, because they no longer have the big monster on the inside who can intimidate, block shots, and score. Now they've got David McCormick, who's, you know, he's an effort guy. He's fine, but he's a freshman, and they've got Mitch Lightfoot. And then, you know, their guards are young, but Quentin Grimes isn't making shots anymore. Like, I think he's completely checked out. So they struggle offensively. Now, they don't struggle as a bad offensively as Texas Tech does. That's a freaking nightmare. But I guess if LeGerald Vick comes back and is Steph Curry reincarnated, then yes, they can fix it a little bit, but I don't see it right now.
I think that that's probably an accurate take. Although I think I'm going to drive the Ochai Agbaji hype train for what, like the next 18 months before he's off to the NBA. I love that dude's game. Had you ever seen him when he was in high school? Did you know about him?
He was the seventh man on Mo Can Elite.
Really?
The seventh man. Like, he did nothing. Like, I think he averaged like 4.5 points a game.
How did he end up? Is there
a He got really good as a senior.
So
and Kansas saw him and took him.
And everyone was kind of like, what are you doing?
It was like, well, you know, maybe they saw something, local kid, da 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 da. But, like, he wasn't that good this summer, you know. Like, he averaged 4.5 points a game. He was the seventh man. Like, we all saw him. Like, no, there's a reason no high major team offered him before his senior year.
Well, good for him. Great story.
Yeah.
Great story. And now, and it's the exact kind of story that's going to make everybody think, like, oh, Brian Snow doesn't know what he's talking about. He didn't see this with Ochai Agbaji. Yeah.
Well, neither did your favorite college coach.
Oh, fair enough. Snow, listen, man, I've kept you an hour. I do appreciate the time. Now, if you guys want to find him, he is on Twitter at bsnow247. And if you want to get the unfiltered Brian Snow, that's where you have to go. You can also find his work at 247 Sports. Snowman, I appreciate the time, brother.
Anytime.
Thanks for listening. Follow me on Twitter.
Give me 5 stars.